You see ESPN do Colt McCoy dirty last night in a pregame where they showed a shot of Jimmy Garoppolo walking into the stadium, and Garoppolo's got a $10,000 suit on that looks 100 grand. Because, yeah. I mean, Garoppolo's a good-looking dude. He's got this.
It does work.
He's got this suit on that, honestly, it's mint condition. He's got the tan going. The hair is in perfect status. And then right after, Colt McCoy walks in. Here it is up on TSN, too. There's Garoppolo looking, honestly, like $1 million.
Yeah, he's a 10. He's a 10 right there.
Yeah. And now Colt McCoy fell asleep at the pool, and he comes walking in. Look at Colt McCoy.
He looks like he's dropping a package off at shipping and receiving for someone in the organization.
Yeah. He's from Detroit, and he's in Vegas for the weekend at like a convention. You know, it's like they had to check his security. So are you an NFL player? Oh, you're the quarterback for the Cardinals. You're playing the other guy, Jimmy Garoppolo, who's in a $10,000 suit? Okay, good luck. Good luck tonight.
You're right. Like, that is dressing down. What is the NFL doesn't have a dress code, or do they? Is it individual teams?
Not that I'm aware of. Yeah, I think individual teams, more or less. But
man, oh man.
Yeah, Colt McCoy, man, he wasn't good. Following Garoppolo, that's tough. And listen, Garoppolo deserves a lot of credit because he could have quit on that team. They quit on him.
Yep.
They were done with him.
Dude, all everyone says about that guy is how terrible he is and how they needed the kid to step in. And it's just this and that, and it's never good enough, but the guy just seems to win a lot.
He wins all the time.
Yeah.
You can say what you want. He wins. He wins football games. And like now, the team that people are picking in the NFC to go to the Super Bowl is the Niners. Like, I think if you asked 100 NFL analysts.
Yeah. Which brings up the question, Hayes, why wouldn't a team like Indy or Chicago, well, the kid's doing some impressive individual things in Chicago, mm-hmm. but you're telling me a team like Indy wouldn't have been sniffing around for Garoppolo to bring him in there? Like,
exactly.
What do you want to? You want to go get Matty Ice out of Atlanta? Like, it's nonsense.
No, you could name 10 teams probably off your head.
No kidding.
Who would be in a better spot with Garoppolo?
And couldn't you, like, had him?
Yes.
At a particular point in the last year?
They were dying to unload him. Like he was.
It seemed like San Fran's last option was, we're going to keep you around.
Yeah, or cut you if we have to. You know, and it's because remember, he showed up. They told him day one, Trey Lance is the guy.
That's right.
Over the summer, he wasn't even practicing. You know, he was recovering. He was rehabbing an injury. But he wasn't even around.
Yeah.
He was Milton from Office
Lynch
Space.
Lynch was like, on ESPN and said, it's Lance's team now. It's his time to go.
Yep, and Jimmy was, like, not even taking second-team reps. And, you think the Jets could probably use Garoppolo? I would say they probably could.
The Cowboys could probably use Garoppolo because they're frauds.
Cowboys could definitely use Jimmy G. That'd be a big upgrade on Dak Prescott. Here's our TSN hockey insider, Pierre LeBrun. Be objective for a second here, Pierre. Be honest. Wouldn't you feel better about the Super Bowl chances of the Cowboys if Jimmy Garoppolo was their quarterback?
No.
What?
I don't think so.
Come on.
No. Oh, my God. I tell you what, I was just, I'm in a parking lot at one of the rinks here in the GTA. My son's about to play, and some of the parents are asking me about the Cowboys game in Minnesota. That is the best that the Cowboys have played over 60 minutes in years. That was unbelievable.
That was.
I mean, that honestly was against an 8-1 team on the road. Now, I get it. Vikings being Vikings, I guess, but that's not how they played all year. They just beat the Bills. So I'm just on cloud nine right now, knowing very well I will have my heart pulled right out of my chest come January. That's okay, though.
Yeah.
That's okay.
Yep. That's probably true. That is probably true. Well, let's talk about the other team where that same logic will apply more than likely. And that, of course, would be the Maple Leafs, where they're up against it here, man. Like, you got Muzzin who's out and not coming back. You got Brody out likely for another couple of weeks. And now Riley's out for at least 10 games, and it sounds like it's probably more than that. That's your top three defensemen on day one of camp. Like, how does Dubas possibly navigate these waters?
Yeah. Drags reported likely 4 to 6 weeks for Riley, and there's your top three money-earning defensemen. on your team, right? And I would say that when the team was healthy before the season, I think we did a hit, and we were still worried about the blue line. So that's not good. But the reality is, as Chris Johnson pointed out on Insider Trading that we just produced, it's going to be on SC shortly, is that, yes, you can go out and use Muzzin's money here at some point, but the Leafs are at the 50 contract limit to begin with, which I think is why they put Wayne Simmonds on waivers again today, although, he cleared last time, so we'll see what happens here. But for the Leafs to make any trade, number one, they have to make room on their 50 contract limit. So that's something to consider that I had, to be honest, overlooked and CJ pointed out.
Do they do it, Pierre, though? People want to know, are they going to get a guy to relieve some of the stress here? Or, do they make it happen? Do they move a contract and be able to bring in a guy?
So I think my sense of it is I think they're going to try and grin and bear it for now and wait till the new year to make that. I do think they will upgrade the blue line between now and March 3rd. I don't think it's imminent. And I could be wrong, of course. But I think what's at play here is that I think they feel internally there's probably going to be more options the later they wait. And here's the other thing. But here's the other thing, too. For the moment, now ask me in 10 days, I might have a different answer. But for the moment, they're not in a desperate situation in terms of survival mode, like some of these other teams that need D. I mean, the Ottawa Senators need a D like yesterday.
No,
right?
They need three of them.
Yeah.
Right. Well, I'm just saying that, the Leafs are in second place in their division, and that's not to say the next couple of weeks now won't be tough without their number one defenseman and overall three of their top four, of course. But at least they're going to try and grind through this from a position of strength standings-wise, and that's important to point out because one of the things that teams try to expose when you're the team selling a defenseman is your leverage points in terms of the pressure that's on the GM to do something now. And, I think there's some level of pressure for the Leafs to go out just on the Jake Muzzin situation alone and upgrade, right? Never mind the fact that Morgan Rielly and TJ Brody are currently injured, too, and those two are coming back at least. And we think it's probably unlikely in Muzzin's case, as you mentioned. But the pressure's not at a 10 out of 10 like it is in Ottawa right now. So that's where you sometimes make your worst trades. So I think the Leafs will just try and get through this for now and then keep exploring the market. But I do think they'll upgrade eventually.
Pierre, you mentioned the market. Do you know offhand some of the names that would be bandied about for defensemen that are out there? Is it just the usual suspects? Everyone talks about Chychrun. They talk about John Klingberg. I think you mentioned to us the other day about L.A. having a ton of right-shot defensemen. Is there somebody else or other teams that we're looking, not maybe focusing on, that might have some availability for players?
Yeah, I mean, the other guy with Klingberg and Anaheim in terms of, probably looking for clarity on his future is veteran Kevin Shattenkirk, who's a UFA at the end of the season. And clearly the Ducks are in rebuild mode. So I suspect there's a decent chance he gets moved as well. And he's actually a cheaper ticket than John Klingberg. And I also, with the Leafs in mind, did a little digging and because you never, some players don't want to play in Canada, right? So we know that. But I was told that Toronto would not be an issue for Kevin Shattenkirk if that conversation ever came about between the Leafs and the Ducks. So just file that away. It's certainly nothing imminent because he's got a personal little trade. So that's why I was digging into that one. Interestingly enough, even though it's not really a position of strength, but depth-wise, the Habs suddenly have a lot of bodies on the blue line in Montreal. And Arpin Basu made this point here this week in The Athletic, but when they get everyone fully back, they're going to have some guys sitting in the press box or going to Laval in Montreal. So there's some potential there because that team, again, is going to look to continue to try and collect assets. I did mention L.A. last week, but remember, the point I was making is that while I think eventually they do trade a right shot D, they don't want to do it until the new year in L.A., so they want to hold on here for a bit. So that's the other difficulty here is that, Chychrun is out there, and I talked about Chychrun on Insider Trading tonight because the Coyotes have told teams again recently here that they are not moving down from their asking price. Two first-round picks plus a prospect or a young player. I mean, they don't feel they have to move them unless someone steps up. But this is the thing, is that I think one of the reasons why Arizona, aside from the fact that Chychrun's asked out, want to move them anytime here is because I think they want to get ahead of the market when it starts to get flooded with more D. There really aren't that many guys available right now, which is why Ottawa, obviously, all summer long going into the start of this season, has struggled to find a trade partner, and why I think the Leafs would be wise in many ways, as long as they can, you know, survive the next stretch here. I think the Leafs would actually be wise to wait a bit and see who else falls on them, you know, suddenly becomes available.
With Pierre LeBrun, TSN Hockey Insider, what's your understanding of the game plan in Montreal? In other words, you know, they were first overall pick. They were awful last year. They're still young. Are they in a position where they think they can make the playoffs and that will adjust their plan, or are they still committed to 3 or 5 years down the road?
Yeah, they're still big picturing this, even though I'm sure if Marty St. Louis was on the phone with us right now, he might want to disagree with me. But that's why coaches coach and GM's GM, if you know what I mean. I think that management is still very much committed to the bigger picture here. I think Montreal is going to come down to earth here. They're still giving up way too many great A's, and essentially right now they're outscoring their issues. And listen, they're fun to watch, and everyone loves the fact that they're right now surpassing expectations in that market. But I think they're going to come down to earth, and then it's going to be obvious what they should be doing. But Ken Hughes, just so you guys know, last week after the GM's meeting, he got grilled pretty good in French for quite a while after the GM's meeting about just that. To your question, Hayes, it's exactly what he was asked. You know, does the plan change if you guys are like a point out or a point in come March? And while he allowed that if the group deserved, you know, some support closer to the deadline, if they're in it, that it may be something he would look at. But he absolutely emphasized that they're not doing anything short term and sacrificing an important asset for a chance at a wild card spot, that their plan has way bigger designs. And he was pretty strong about that.
Yeah, and that's understandable considering, you know, they got some good young pieces. They still got some big contracts that they might want to eventually move on from. But, yeah, it's, I mean, obviously we know of where the two radioactive markets are in the country right now, and that's Ottawa and Vancouver.
Yeah.
And, you know, how do these play out? They both lost last night. Vancouver's only, I think, 5 or 6 points out of a playoff spot, but it feels like they're an eternity back. And Ottawa, it's even worse. Ottawa's the second worst team in the league. Only Anaheim has less points. So what gives here in Ottawa and Vancouver?
Yeah, and Pierre Dorion has repeatedly gone to bat for DJ Smith again last week, too. And I mean, we asked him after the GM's meeting, and I know what we always say is, what else are they going to say publicly? But in the case of Pierre Dorion, it's really strong that he really thinks coaching is not an issue. But how long can you go until something has to happen?
How much of that could be the ownership, though, Pierre? Like, the Melnick's not there anymore. Like, were they willing to stomach paying DJ Smith not to be there and then pay an upgrade? Like, where does that come into play?
Well, I understand why you would say that, especially given the history of the team, but I actually truly think Pierre Dorion doesn't think this is on DJ Smith, and he might be right. I mean, look at the blue line.
It's on him, then.
Whereas I think if you're juxtaposing the two markets on fire right now, I actually think a coaching change is inevitable in Vancouver. I just don't know when exactly. It just feels like that's what management keeps looking at internally and discussing. You know, there's just too many whispers. So I think that will happen at some point in Vancouver. But you know, again, the thing is, Bruce Boudreau's up at the end of the year, so it's hardly rocket science, right? Mm-hmm. So the question is, do they do it, you know, they do it before the end of the year or not? They do it soon or in a month or wait? But I think there will be change there. You know, again, and I asked Jim Rutherford this earlier this season, to be fair. I asked this, and I thought he gave, you know, obviously he answered the question. He didn't duck it. But when it comes to the Canucks, I'm still a bit, what's the word I would use? I don't know about mystified, but I didn't get the JT Miller extension this summer. And he's obviously a wonderful player. Don't get me wrong. But I guess I thought the Canucks were headed in a different direction.
Yeah.
And I didn't really get where he fit in with that extension. And I understand what Jim Rutherford said to me in that interview we did, is that you know, you don't trade away good players and that he still fits into, you know, their retooling. I just think that that was an opportunity, to be honest, to kickstart obtaining the kind of assets I think that that pipeline's in dire need of. But it may, you know, it may come down to a lack of an appetite from ownership. It always comes down to ownership. From ownership of wanting too long a rebuild in Vancouver. And the other thing, and this goes into the coaching decision here as to how long Bruce Boudreau has behind the bench, keep in mind the Canucks are still paying Travis Green this entire season. So they're paying Green. Yeah. They're paying Boudreau. If you fire Boudreau, someone else goes in. I mean, these are realities, right? And I always like to bring that up. You know, they're paying two head coaches right now, one they fired last year and one who's still behind the bench.
Well, and I wanted to add one thing on the Ottawa situation, guys, is, you know, with the pending sale of this team, you have to think that the new owners are going to want to put their stamp on the organization as well. That might be sweeping changes. Who knows, right? Mm-hmm. Because we don't know who the ownership group is. So my thought
regardless, Jamie,
too,
it's probably a clean sweep anyway, isn't it?
Okay, so let's think this out loud. If you have if you make a change right now, you might be making a new change again, what, 3-4 months from now. Mm-hmm. You have to think of the situation for these players. And I'll go back to Edmonton, 5-6 years ago with Taylor Hall, Eberle, and RNH. How many head coaches did those guys have? Didn't they have like 8 head coaches in 7 years? Like, I don't think you want that for some of these young players, Jake Sanderson and Shane Pinto and Tim Stützle and stuff. I believe that Pierre does believe in DJ Smith. You know, they're missing their number one centerman. They're missing their number one defenseman. And Zub was out for a long time. And they needed all of those players just to compete, just to try and play meaningful hockey. So it's a balancing act. So I think that what you're sitting there is going, yeah, they're in the ditch. They're, what, like you said, Brian, 2 points out of last place.
Yep.
But are you going to make a change? And then there might be change coming around the corner anyway. So I think that's what you're trying to figure out. It's a balancing
act. It's complex. Yep, it is.
Right? And one of the unfortunate things of this cap system, although I know O likes to go on about how he hates this cap system in terms of the inactivity, and I'm with him, lack of activity. But the other thing that it's done is it's put the coaches right in the bullseye all the time now, because it's like, you know, you're trying to make other changes and you can, and it always, that's what I don't like in a way, because it's like, well, what, you know, is that all that teams could do now to shake up their team? I mean,
tough to dig out of a hole.
Yeah, I mean, geez, of all people, like I did an interview with Lou Lamoriello yesterday while the Islanders were here in Toronto, and I asked him about how, you know, I told him a lot of us were surprised when he fired Barry Trotz, and he talked about how he actually still talks to Trotz all the time. They have a terrific relationship, which I know Trotz has also told me recently. And he basically said, he goes, you know, you can't change the whole team. It's essentially how he explained, you know, that they needed a change. They needed a little jolt for a team that missed the playoffs last year. And I think that's sort of part of the issue with the system right now, is how else do you provide a jolt sometimes? And the coaches are paying the price more often than not.
Yep, certainly up here that's been the case. A lot of Canadian coaching turnover. All right, Pierre, we'll let you get back in the rink. Thank you, buddy. We'll do it again soon.
Right on, boys.
Pierre LeBrun, our TSN Hockey Insider. Leafs in Jersey tomorrow night. Raptors at home against the Brooklyn Nets, who are in Philly tonight. Ben Simmons making his return to Philly, playing. Actually playing this time in Philly. That could get ugly for Ben.
That could get ugly.
And we'll get into it more tomorrow about the status of Scotty Barnes. Nick Nurse's comments on Gary Trent today, where he's not happy with the way Trent's defending, like the energy he's bringing. And he basically said if he's not going to do it, he probably isn't going to play here. So
I don't think Nick Nurse, I think he's got a clout now with the championship and the way he kind of conducts himself. If you're not going to buy in, I don't think you're around very long.
Nope. And Trent, like the nature of the NBA, every year you're basically up for a new deal, you know, like Trent's a good scorer. He really had a great season last year, like put himself on the map, but it's one thing to do it 1 year, right? Like you got to keep going and going and going. And I think with Siakam out, Barnes likely out tomorrow, Otto Porter's been out, Chua's out, like they need him to play well. and to defend. That's the identity of the Raptors. That's what Nick Nurse wants.
And when the coach calls a guy out like that, it's generally the fork in the road. It either goes one way or the other. He either, you know what I mean? He either gets involved or it's an awful ending.
Exactly. Exactly.